Welcome to another edition of the EA-HCP Steward Podcast. Today we're talking with Patrick Shriver from the San Antonio Water System and Chris Collins of SWCA Environmental Consultants. Patrick is managing SAW's non-revenue water program, which is focused on discovering water leaks in San Antonio's water distribution system so crews can get there and repair those leaks quickly, saving millions of gallons of water. The EA-HCP is funding a portion of those repairs and getting credit toward its federal permit with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. This is definitely an interesting partnership you'll want to learn about. So here's our conversation with Patrick Shriver. Patrick, thanks for taking time today to talk to us a little bit about this regional conservation program. As a starter, the HCP does have this regional water conservation program. Give us a little bit of background about what that is, and then we'll talk a little bit about the specifics on the SAWS program.
Okay, yeah. So, John, as the regional conservation program and SAWS's involvement, the program is part of the spring flow protection measures. And the idea behind it was to target savings of 20,000 acre feet by permit holders throughout the entire region. And SAWS had an opportunity through its non-revenue water program targeting real losses to add to the program. The program was built to save 20,000 acre feet and then have 10,000 acre feet of that contributed to the HCP to reduce pumpage that would protect the spring flow in turn.
So that 10,000 acre feet of water, once it's in the what that's called the groundwater trust, that will never be pumped again. Is that right?
That won't be pumped during the duration of the current HCP.
Okay. So the department you run at SAWS is has to do with non-revenue water. Why don't you explain that for us?
Okay. Non-revenue water is the new term for what used to be considered unaccounted for water. It can still be called water loss, but it's comprehensive. It includes both the water that a utility uses to do business, such as firefighting and so forth, and sampling and water quality flushing. But the important factor of it is it's you account for all losses. Losses that deal with meter under registration, which are actually it's water that can get to an endpoint but not be paid for the utility. And the ones that we're talking about today specifically are the real losses in the distribution system, which deal with leaks.
And so let's talk a little bit about how this all came together with the HCP program. I understand that they are funding a portion of the work that you do, but it's very specific to above and beyond what you were already doing. So tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, so SAWS was doing roughly 20% of its system back probably in 2012 or so. Then we engaged with our water loss control consultants, and they found that it was cost effective for us to increase that scanning of our system to 50% of the system. I've had involvement with the HCP process, and at that time, we had recognized that there was something that we could work on together, because with that increased scanning, we were going to have a large increase in work orders generated, and we weren't sure how we were going to fund those repairs.
And so that's the part that the HCP is funding, the stuff that's on top that you weren't going to be able to fund.
Yes. So essentially, where the additional leaks that are detected through our leak detection scanning are basically increased presence out in our system, we're taking those and translating those into work orders that are above and beyond the baseline that we had, and those are being generated.
Yeah. And so I know you prioritize the leaks. Explain how that works, and then which ones SAWS takes care of, and then which ones are handled, I guess, under this HCP conservation program.
One of the things we found out really early, that you couldn't just send all of the leaks over to the – these are actually external contractors that are required by our agreement with the EA and the HCP. We found that we need to send the lower priority 3 and 4 repair orders over to those leak contractors because we didn't want to disadvantage our response time. So still priority one and two leaks are repaired by our own internal work crews, which we can't take credit for those. And those would have been most of our baseline work in the past anyways. So the additional leaks that are now found through leak detection are turned over to third-party contractors for repair.
I understand this is a unique opportunity that a utility like SAWS has. This is not common, I guess, for a utility this size to be able to scan half of its system every year. Is that right?
Yeah, I don't know of any others that are doing 50% of their system the way we are. There may be. A lot of other utilities may be doing a smaller portion like we did before. They may be using kind of other tools out on the market to do so. Boots on the ground to cover half of your system a year. I call it a hypervigilant scanning, which we intend to keep doing for 4 years, which was really kind of what the program was built to do for 4 years with the HCP.
And so where are you in that whole four-year cycle?
We're halfway through the third year in 2017, so we're essentially going over the area that we did back in 2015 again right now.
This obviously is a program that benefits both SAWS and the HCP. Describe a few of those benefits for both sides.
Yeah, so I mentioned it already. I think the big benefit is the non-revenue water coordinator at SAWS is I get the use of this 4 years of data. I have some data even outside of that, but we'll take that and we'll optimize and have the most effective program that we can cost effectively. I think in terms of our HCP and our relationship with the HCP, we've always been really active. I think being able to put the water in the groundwater trust for the duration of the permit through 2027 helps to protect in the spring flows and the species. You know, it's the catalyst to whatever our next rendition of the HCP permit will be.
Okay. Thanks so much for the time today. Appreciate it.
You're welcome.
Next up is Chris Collins, who is a biologist with SWCA Environmental Consultants. He is the lead on the non-native animal species removal program at Land O'Lakes in New Braunfels. You think you have great fish stories? Wait till you hear about Chris's adventures at Land O'Lakes. Here's Chris Collins. So, Chris, here we are out at Land O'Lakes. It's a nice day to be out on the lake, but I know you guys are here for a different mission. Talk to us a little bit about what you guys are doing for the HCP and a little bit of history of the project.
Sure. Yeah, we are removing four particular invasive species, species that are not native to the lake. It is suspected that these species, which consist of tilapia, armored catfish, nutria, and an invasive snail called a giant ram's horn snail. And it's suspected that these critters, which are not native here, were brought here by man, take up space and other resources that native animals like fish and including the endangered fountain darter, which is covered under the HCP. They take up some of those resources, and so we think by removing some of these invasive species might provide more habitat, better habitat for these critters.
So you've been at this for several years now.
This is our fifth season. My company, SWC Environmental Consultants, we've been removing these species by various ways. The armored catfish, primarily by hand picking or spearing underwater with the Hawaiian slings. We've used a fike net to catch the tilapia and also by spearing. And we use have-a-heart traps to catch the nutria. And then for the ram's horn snail, we hand-pick those.
You say that all of these species were brought here by man. Is that through aquarium, people dumping aquariums, or how do they get here?
Tilapia, it's not very clear how they got here. I mean, obviously somebody let them go. The armored catfish, we believe, are from the aquarium trade, the ram's horn snail from the aquarium trade, and the nutria, well, there's the whole story back when the nutria got released on accident in Louisiana. They've spread out from there, and So it's all mostly man-caused. I mean, these invasive species have come here because of man.
Mm-hmm. So you were, in the beginning, I guess, catching literally boatloads of fish, right?
Yes, yes. This is our fifth season, so catching 100 fish a day is a good day for us, which is good. And we want to catch less because there's less fish to catch out there. When we started, we'd catch 200 to 300 to 400 fish a day. Yesterday, this is our fifth trip for the year. Each trip, we come out 3 days in a row. And our first days are usually the best. And yesterday, we only caught 60 fish. And the armored catfish now, we would pull out 10s, 20s, 30s, just not even trying. Now, like yesterday, we caught three in the lake, in the land of lake proper. And that's a big day for us for armored catfish. They used to be everywhere. But they're in small numbers, and we've really knocked those back.
So after you catch the fish, what do you do with them?
Well, these are invasive species, and Texas Parks and Wildlife Department has some requirements whenever anybody, not just a researcher such as us, anybody catches an invasive species, you're supposed to remove it from the population. You can't let it go. Well, we catch the fish, we weigh them, we sex them, and get a length on them. And then, so after we do that, a lot of times we have to cut them open to sex them, and then so we eviscerate them, put them in the garbage, and they go into a dumpster.
So have you been working on the project for the whole 5 years?
Yes, there are two of us that are still here from the beginning, and we've been working on the project for the whole 5 years, and it's been interesting. Our methods, and I've had to change depending on, you know, since we're catching less fish, we have to get more creative, particularly with tilapia, which is our most common critter we deal with, that you have to be out here on a sunny day. They like it sunny. If it rained recently and the water's cloudy, they're really hard to catch. They like it sunny. So really the best time to catch these fish is about after lunch till around 3, and they start to school and we can get them in the nets. So a lot of times we'll get the boat in the water and we'll get divers in the water and we'll scare them in the net at one time. And that's when it can get good. We're trying to avoid endangered species habitat like the fountain darter, and we certainly don't go up in the spring runs. And so we try to avoid the upper end, the northern end of the lake near the escarpment. We try to focus most of our work near the south end, near where the lake meets the new channel. And we have done some removal on the new channel. We actually have done quite a bit of catfish removal. And of all these species, I feel best about the armored catfish because you can actually see their destruction. They create burrows in the wall systems in the ground. And I think removing those really has an immediate impact. So that's what I'm most happy about.
Thanks for your time, Chris.